Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
An issue that has been in the news for many years, and not in a good way, has been the state of the South African National Defence Forces. And it's become more and more apparent, particularly with the rather disastrous attendance in Iran to meet the Iranian ministers and related officials of Iran's forces, and in which he made statements that were considered unduly political for someone in his position. But the issue of the Defence Force and the state of the Defence Force really is becoming, shall we say, more toxic. To this end, I've invited a new guest onto the program. He is Ricardo Teixeira, the associate editor of The Daily Friend. He's a journalist and defense analyst and national security advocate. And he champions reform on South Africa's security and defense architecture. So with that in mind, he is an obvious person to talk to. Ricardo, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ricardo, I'm referring to an article you wrote in the Daily Friend this weekend, really in consequence of an interview with Bantu Holomisa, who is generally recognized as a man who's been in the Defence Forces and actually knows something about the art of the military. What were some of the issues he complained about? Some of the sort of basic competencies that aren't being met in the SANDF currently.
The general was quite general and deputy minister was quite blunt, really, about the incapacity of the senior leadership. We more spoke about, you know, there's been an acceptance that there's a lot lacking in the senior leadership. I mean, he spoke of senior officers that don't know how to read a map. And he said, you know, a lot of the skills transfer didn't happen. But something that he spoke about is, you know, we're at a point now where you can't ask a stone to bleed. You know, we can't ask them to do what they've not been able to do. When looking ahead at the future, we need to look at the middle management, the mid-level officers, your lieutenants to your majors, because those are really the future of the Defence Force. And spoke about investing in the future and the capabilities of leadership. You know, your human capital is something that is very, very valuable. I mean, it's a human-intensive institution. There was a phrase that Donald Rumsfeld said in the early 2000s that you don't go to war with the army you want. You go to war with the army you have. Mm. And after speaking to Holomisa, what I realized, you know, you don't just go to war with the army you have. You go to war with the people you have. Mm. And it takes a very long time to train up a soldier and an officer. It's not something that happens in a year. It's something that takes 5 to 10 years. So it's been the result of a long-term failure of not just leadership, but also planning. It's something that funding isn't going to fix. Mm.
It was interesting because you mentioned in the article the absorption into the old South African Defence Force of Umkhonto we Sizwe Zani and People's Liberation Army and the Homeland Defence Forces. And this is where Bantu Holomisa was positioned. And I think you correctly say the integration was politically necessary, and it achieved modest success in maintaining regional deployments and internal order during those early years. But it never transitioned to a fully professional, conventionally trained army. That was never completed. And it raises a question I've had for years and perhaps needs to be asked, and I don't know if I'm unfair in doing so, is was it actually realistic? I mean, the problem is that the one of the strengths for and against the time prior, you know, the apartheid era, was you had a well-trained, generally a well-trained army, whatever the policy behind it might have been. But you're dealing with revolutionary movements who were fighting a struggle on a very much, let's call it a guerrilla-type basis. So they were never actually really military structures in a sophisticated, complicated sense. And that in incorporating them in, what you were doing, what appears to have happened, is you got political favoritism for posts rather than competence.
Yes.
Rather than merit.
I think a big thing that happened was at the time there was this short-term, fairly short-sightedness that, you know, we're not going to need a conventional force now. But they didn't see, and we still don't see a massive conventional need in the immediate short term.
Mm.
Problem is those sorts of risks have a habit of appearing a lot faster than you can prepare for them. So it was very much, you know, not seeing the mountain in the distance, but looking at the little bump ahead and going, we don't need a force that big to deal with this, but ignore the potential future risks. And Hulumisa was, again, he was quite blunt. It was one of the first things he said when we sat down is that, you know, we need to remember, yeah, we're talking about, and he used the word guerrillas. I think a big part of it as well was psychology. If you think of it from the revolutionary aspect, where you had a series of revolutionary fighters who were trained and, the ideology instilled in them by their Soviet backers, you know, they were trained to hate the South African Defense Force. This was the ideological enemy, and they were trained to defeat it. I think those that were on the activist and the union side of the ANC very much were aware that at some point they were going to be in charge of the government. But I don't know if that happened with the MK and the revolutionary fighters. And it, you know, very suddenly they went from, I want to destroy this institution, this is my sworn enemy, to congratulations, you're part of it and you're in charge now. I don't think the end of the revolution is never good for the revolutionary. And I think that psychological barrier, you know, to suddenly become in charge of the institution that you wanted to destroy, we don't talk about that as a country and the effect of that. Is that, you know, how do you lead something that you were trained to hate? How do you then decide now, okay, I need to now love this. This is my career. I need to then carry this forward. That is a question that we as a country have not asked.
Mm-hmm. You talk about one of the key personnel issues is the absence or weakness of the middle-ranked officers and the general lack of competence, and not being disciplined. Now, what struck me in reading the article and reading this was back in the day, and I won't say how long ago the day was, I was an employment lawyer. And one of the key issues that we often had to grapple with and advise companies on was instilling discipline, showing reward where it was warranted and disciplining where it was warranted. It's fundamental. It's fundamental to the success of an organization. Certainly from the perspective of a layman, a civilian, that on steroids would be required in the Defense Force. Yes. So what are the things that have been missing?
I mean, just a few simple things. You don't see people salute as much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've often been in situations where I'm talking to a captain or a major or a lieutenant, or even in some such situations, a sergeant, and either a higher or a lower ranking personnel member will walk past, and no one stops to salute each other. It's rare. They only really do it with the senior, if a general comes into the room. And another thing is the uniform standards. I mean, often I see senior officers wearing their uniforms incorrectly. You know, they've got the wrong order on their badges.
Good
or
God.
You know, their rank is skew, and no one corrects them. You know, dirty boots. It used to be that you need to see a reflection in your boots, but nowadays no one wears the same boots because there's a big problem in the Defense Force. I mean, the union even runs a Boots for Troops campaign to try and get boots, and it's boots and uniforms are a big problem at the moment. But even when it comes to the qualification badges, seeing senior officers wearing proudly qualifications they did not earn. There's a couple of them that I'm aware of that, you know, wear parachute jump wings that they didn't earn, or Pathfinder qualifications when they've never undergone the Pathfinder course and so forth. And, you know, these are, in some militaries, this is an offense. I mean, in the US, it's a criminal offense. But it's interesting to see how these small little things just, you know, they let it slide. But even at Combat Training Center Lohatla last year for exercise Vukushlome, you know, you arrive there at the base, and I remember getting off the bus, and all the buildings there at the base area, one of them's called the Steve Biko building, but the S had fallen off. And, you know, you see a lot of cracked windows around bases, And I mean, the video that Carl Niehaus posted this previous week that went viral a bit on Twitter, and the Defense Force issued a statement about it, about a bathroom at the South African Infantry Base down in Grahamstown. It's all these small little things, you know, not maintaining a bathroom, not keeping your uniform straight, not keeping your boots shined. Over time, that lack of discipline is compounded to where bases are largely decrepit.
Mm.
And the effect on morale has compounded over time.
Mm.
There are still a lot of good officers in the Defense Force. I've met very many of them. The problem is that I've not met a good officer that's in charge.
Mm. Mm. Now, that's certainly an impression one gets. And I would have thought that given a lot of the discipline you're talking about may seem excessive in the in the civilian sense, but you need an incredibly you need high levels of discipline in conflict situations for a start. So that makes sense. And the issue of morale, I think, is completely underestimated. It's underestimated in the public sector, public service in general, and I would have thought more so. Just keeping your troops happy when they should be, committed when they should be, and respectful when they should be, and all these things seem to be missing. To what extent would the constant calls for more money make any tangible difference? Is it really about having stuff, purchasing equipment, purchasing arms, etc., or is so much of it can be done without investment? In other words, it requires a merit-based approach to overhauling the behavior of the army, the behavior of the people in charge, or getting rid of the people in charge if necessary.
It's a really multifaceted approach, because it's, you know, you do need more money, but to quote what the chair of SCOPA said, you know, you can't ask for example, 10 billion rand when you have a couple billion in irregular expenditure. You're not going to get anywhere with additional funding when there's no fiscal restraint and fiscal responsibility. If the people in charge can't come up with a plan for how to spend more money and how to turn things around, I don't expect any more money to make any of a difference. Mm. I mean, we can't look at those that have led the Defense Force to where it is now and expect them to suddenly turn it around. Mm. I think we do need a change of leadership. We need new capable leaders. I know the promotions for the next chiefs of service and the next chief of the Defense Force are going to be out soon, because the current chief retires in December. But I'm not very hopeful that, again, that the right people are going to be put in charge. Looking at who the contenders are for the top job, I'm not very hopeful. But again, yeah, you need a plan before you can get funding. You need to know what that money is going to be used for. And again, a lot of it's going to go down to new personnel, new training, and recapacitating units and capabilities that have degraded. I mean, our submarine capability is virtually non-existent. Mm. Buying new submarines isn't going to help. You need to teach people how to use submarines. Mm. You need to learn how to maintain submarines. So that's, again, it's more than just money, but money is a big part of it. You know, the Defense Force is an expensive institution to maintain, but it's also a human intensive institution. You need your people, but you also need your people to have a plan.
Mm. Well, one of the priorities you mentioned is, and we've alluded to earlier, is that is capability, merit, talent, mastering things like electronics, reading topographical data, handling drones, and thinking critically under pressure. So clearly also what this implies is there's got to be, you've got to look at recruits who are better steeped in maths and science, in the STEM subjects, and have got to be screened appropriately for that. In a way, I mean, obviously, that makes huge, huge, huge sense. What is the current sort of level of training or competency training within the Defence Force in areas, in skill sets such as that?
Mediocre.
Yeah.
If I had to sum it up in a word, and that's not a word of my choosing, it's a word of a captain in charge of a training capacity that I won't mention because I don't want to out him. But I spoke to a captain about the MSDS intake, and he said, you know, that the level of training and the level of personnel intake, it's just, at this point, it's inadequate. It's mediocre. It's, you know, where he said to me, I'm teaching 18 and 19 year olds how to clip their toenails when other countries are, you know, like South Korea is expecting every single person in service to know how to fly a drone. They're expecting to turn their 500,000 strong service into everybody should know how to fly a drone. I don't think SANDF is anywhere near the capability to do that. But a lot of it comes down to the recruitment process. It's still a paper-based process. They don't look at much in terms of your academic, you know, they just have a matric certificate. But if we had to look at how the applications come in, again, they're paper-based. You're trying to pull in 5,500 people, but you're receiving over 200,000 applications. So what do you do? You're not going to go through all of them. And I don't blame them for not doing that. You're going to take the first 15,000 and find the first 5,500 people that make the grade, but you're not going to find those that excel because it's an information overload. A recruitment system like the SAPS e-recruitment would go a long way, where you can, through the electronic recruitment online, already put in some sort of filter where, you know, if you had to ask them to answer 30 questions but make 5 questions per page and just, you know, have them have to click through. Guarantee you the people that aren't motivated aren't going to click through all 6 pages to answer 5 multiple choice questions per page. But if you can get through that, that's already one cut through. And then, you know, write a motivational letter. And again, with the multiple choice questions, the filtering on the answers can filter through like, well, these people answer this certain way. They are most likely to fit you, the type of profile that you're looking for. These people did not, we're not even going to show you their application. You know, uploading your matric marks again and then coming in for psychometric tests and psychological interviews, all before you even get to the medical. You can filter out down to the sort of people you're looking for. I mean, I'd vow to tell SANDF, you know, if you're looking at the future where you need people to use drones, I would go to every high school and find me the kid that's got a high score in FIFA, the latest FIFA game, that's someone that plays a lot of video games and has that hand-eye coordination with lots of controls. That's the person I would pick to fly a drone. I'm not going to pick a 35-year-old rifleman that's been in the service since he was 18 and has only ever been a rifleman. You know, there needs to be a new approach. They need to start. The lag has been so long and gone so deep that you can play catch-up to a certain extent, but at some point you need to start leapfrogging ahead and say, okay, stop doing this. We can't catch up on that. We need to start from scratch with a completely different approach. You know, if you keep the definition of insanity, if you keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, that, you know, you're not going to get anything.
No, it sounds like the changes need to be made in the wider society. Ricardo, there were a number of questions I could still ask you, but we've come to the end of the time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.